Most people retain a fondness for the music they grew up with. For musicians, it's often what motivated them to perform in the first place. Aaron Neville says that when he was growing up in New Orleans, doo-wop was his first inspiration. And now, after winning 4 Grammy Awards and being nominated for 11 more for his solo work and as a member of the Neville Brothers, Aaron Neville has returned to his doo-wop roots with a CD called My True Story. Aaron Neville joined us in January to talk about it, and we're re-airing that interview for you now. Your first big hit was Tell It Like It Is, but that came out in 1967, years after doo-wop had run its course.
Right.
Do you think of it as a doo-wop record in any way?
I do. You know, like when I was singing it, it was, I didn't really care too much for this particular song, because I was looking at an up-tempo song when my brother Art said, no, that's the one. I was just singing it, you know. But I also, everything I've done so from the beginning has some kind of doo-wop essence in it. You know?
Because when we think of New Orleans, think of jazz, of course, Zydeco, Cajun music, even country music. But were there any doo-wop groups in New Orleans?
I'm sure there was. My brother had a doo-wop group in the Calio Projects in New Orleans, and they would sit out on the park bench at night and harmonize, and they'd go around, win all the talent shows, and, you know, they used to run me away until they figured I could hold a note, then they let me sing with them and showed me how to do the harmonies and all, and because Art was like the first singer. He's my one of my first inspirations.
And singing some of the other people's hits.
Oh, yeah.
Earth Angel or whatever.
Clyde McFadder, Sonny Till and the Oreos, or, you know, Clovers.
In fact, you have a number of songs here from the Drifters, with Clyde McFadder and then
Benny King,
some following groups.
I can't remember who sang Ruby Ruby.
Yeah, but it's interesting. They had so many famous lead singers. People went on to solo careers afterward. Were they your favorite group?
They were one of them. I mean, I had a bunch of different favorite groups.
Well, but you must have been influenced by other music, because
I was influenced by gospel, Cowboys, Nat King Cole. But the doo-wop, I think, took prevalence. It's like, you know, the most important thing.
You won a Grammy for Don't Know Much, which you recorded with Linda Ronstadt.
And which I ended with a doo-wop, a little curly key on the end of it.
You've recorded songs in so many different genres, but you're saying no matter what, in the back of your head, there's always
I did the Grand Tour, and I ended that the same week, you know.
Mm-hmm. So, despite that, you've said that you've always wanted to do a doo-wop record. What's taking you so long?
You know, I did a mini doo-wop album back in the 80s with Joel Dawn with called Orchid and the Storm. I also did a doo-wop version of the Mickey Mouse March for the Hal Wilner, the Stay Awake album.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's been in my blood.
And other people have paid tributes. Frank Zappa used to do he used to write new doo-wop songs. we opened with Work With Me Annie, which was originally recorded by Hank Ballard and the Midnighters. Wasn't that considered rather risque when it was
released? Yeah, they wouldn't play it on the radio. You know, we had to go to the Sweet Shop and play it on the jukebox. I played it at home on your record player.
And what was the suggestion in that song?
Well, you know, you got me. I guess Work With Me Annie, you know, but
there was a kind of a sexual connotation.
I guess.
And it was a version of it was recorded by Etta James as
Dance with Me Henry, right, Hi and Harvey.
And then they did Henry's Got Flat Feet.
Yeah. Well, you know, the follow-ups to Work With Me Annie with the Hank Ballard was Annie had a baby, she can't work no more.
Which would suggest what Annie was was doing before. You, one of your recent albums, I Know I've Been Changed, was also was a return to gospel music. You also sang Sam Cooke's A Change Is Gonna Come with the Mount Zion Mass Choir on a compilation album called A Happy Day. But aren't you a Catholic?
Yeah.
Did you listen to much gospel growing up as a Catholic?
When I was
in
a little boy, my grandmother used to sit me on her lap, and she would listen to the gospel stations, you know, and they were playing Brother Joe Mays and Sister Rosetta Tharpe and Mahalia and, you know, the Blind Boys, you name it. As a little boy, I was listening to this, and the disc jockey's name was Dr. Daddy-O.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and when I heard Sam Cooke, and I was about 13 or something, like 12 when I heard him.
With the Soulsters.
Yeah, that just blew me away. So.
Well, he influenced a lot of people both in gospel and outside of gospel.
No doubt. Speaking of Change Gonna Come, I think I recorded that at least three times already.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one of those songs that has the feel of gospel without being a gospel song.
Right.
You've said that you'd been hoping to do an album of this type for a long time. Did people tell you that doo-wop might not appeal to record buyers who prefer Beyonce and rap music?
Nobody told me anything. They just, you know, probably wouldn't even, you know, entertain me, you know, with it. But it's been in my heart. I'm glad that Don Was and Blue Note Records gave me a chance to do it, you know.
Did Don Was grow up listening to doo-wop?
Well, yeah, he's hip to it. He's not as old as I am, but Keith Richards, you know, we're talking like we listen to the same music.
Keith Richards growing up in England listening to doo-wop. Now, he's involved in this in a number of ways. He co-produced the album and plays guitar on it. Hasn't your son Ivan performed with the Rolling Stones?
Yeah, well, Ivan's also worked with Keith's solo band, The Expensive Winos. And he's done stuff with the Stones also.
So was that how you and Keith met?
No, the Nevilles opened up for Keith in 1981, so we met back there, and we've been running across each other's paths since then. And it's always a pleasure when we meet each other. It's cool. I always say that Keith is the most down-to-earth guy you could meet, you know.
And you have an impressive group of rock musicians playing on this album.
Yeah.
Ben Montench, a founding member of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, George G. Roselli, who has played with Bob Dylan over the last decade and more.
And he's from New Orleans.
And then you have former members of a number of the most famous doo-wop groups backing you up.
Eugene Pitt, he wrote the song, I think sang the lead on Jive Five's My True Story. Dickie Harmon sang with the Del Vikings. Bobby J sang with the Teenagers. Joe Katz, I think he sang with Brooklyn Bridge. Yeah, and...
So, and they're singing back up here.
Yeah.
Did the fact that they sang in those groups make it easier to achieve an authentic sound?
Yeah, well, I mean, they've been doing that for years, you know, like it's a natural thing for them.
Immediately falling into the right part, knowing the kind of harmony that would be required for any song.
Yeah, I mean, just like me, when I hear one of the songs, I know it is in my heart already, so I don't have to learn it. You know, it's like it's in my subconscious.
Well, all of these songs pretty much depended on four-part harmony. It's kind of like the gospel quartets.
Yeah.
You kind of know where, if you sing in a certain range, just where you're going to be in the harmony.
That's probably where it come from, the gospel quartets, you know, turn into doo-wop.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think of doo-wop as being more of a piano-based music than later rock, which featured the guitar. And many of the original doo-wop records always had this tenor sax solo in the middle. How did you balance the two? Because you didn't want to make it sound like a record that was recorded in 1958.
No, we just went in. We wanted to put our spin on the song. We didn't want to get away from the original. We wanted to respect that, you know. But it's also, I look at it as it was the doo-wop era, you know, because like songs like Good Night, My Love by Jesse Belvin, you wouldn't call that a doo-wop, but...
Well, because he did a solo.
A doo-wop. Yeah, you know.
Well, in the end, the only difference between that and a doo-wop record is that he didn't have a group.
Yeah, and they didn't start calling the doo-wop till later on. Back then, it was like called R&B.
Mm-hmm. So first race music.
Yeah, I know.
Eugene Pitt, you mentioned the Jive Five, co-wrote the song My True Story, which is the title track.
Right.
Were you... how did that song come about?
Well... Don was producing the Stones, and he was rooming underneath Keith, and Keith had the Jive Five album on a loop over and over and over and over. So he said, you know, he knew that Keith would want to be a part of this project, so when we started talking about it, he gave Keith a call. Keith said, man, yeah, what have you been waiting on? Call me. You know? So he was ready.
Uh-huh. And then had you written a lot of songs over the years?
I've written stuff. I can't, you know, I'm not really, I write poetry. Some of them turn into songs, you know, but I don't sit down and plan to write. When I write, I'm inspired. Something tells me, like somebody is telling me the words.
Well, do you think very differently when you're doing something that's going to be solo Aaron Neville as opposed to the things that you did with your brothers?
Well, it's a different thing altogether. With the brothers, it's like, you know, I'm doing a part in it, you know. This is me, you know, because I can do all of the harmonies, not at once, but...
But with overdubbing, yeah. You could do anything. You could actually do a record in which you did all your own backups.
No doubt. I did that with Mickey Mouse March. I'm singing, Dr. John is playing the keyboard, and I'm doing all the backups. I did a version of Stardust with Rob Wasserman. He's playing the bass, and I'm doing the sounding like the Billy Ward and the Dominoes, you know.
We're going to take a little break, and we'll listen to another. We'll listen to the song that made you famous.
All right.
Tell It Like It Is. We'll be cool. Back with Aaron Neville after this.
Something to play with. Go and find yourself a toy. Baby, my time is too expensive. And I'm not a little boy. If you are serious, don't play with my heart, it makes me furious. But if you want me to love you, then a baby I will. Girl, you know I will. Tell it like it is. Don't be ashamed. Let your conscience be your guide. But I know deep down inside.
We're back with an interview I did with Aaron Neville last January, and that's him singing Ruby Baby from his latest CD called My True Story, released by Blue Note, the great jazz label. A lot of people think of that song as being by Dion and the Belmonts, but didn't the Drifters record it first?
The Drifters, yeah.
Which one was in the back of your head when you
were singing? Both of them, because you can hear a little Dion. I love Dion's version of it, too, so I just kind of combined both of them.
Now, over the years, you must have met a lot of your childhood heroes, the people who sang with the best doo-wop groups. In fact, I first time I saw you was at the Apollo when Tell It Like It Is was a big hit, and the Flamingos were on that bill, and they were already older guys, but they had been superstars when we were kids.
One of my favorite groups, yeah.
So did you find out what life had been like for them during the heyday of doo-wop?
You know, like one of my favorite groups, Pookie Hudson and the Spaniels, who did Good Night, Sweetheart and all that. You know, I just knew that they were, man, y'all, they're living on a hill somewhere, you know, and got to talk with Pookie, and he had me crying. He had a hit record out, and he's sleeping on the park bench in Central Park on the newspaper, you know, because he wasn't getting paid, and I say, oh, wow, so that's what I got to look forward to.
Well, the record labels would rip everybody off. A bunch of kids came in, made a record. You know, who cares whether we pay them or not? It must have been a tough life.
It was tough, yeah. Another thing, I got to sit with Curtis Mayfield for about an hour and a half in a New York hotel. He was flat on his back. He was paralyzed, you know.
Yeah, he had a terrible accident.
Yeah, a light fixture fell on him on the stage and paralyzed him. And his spirits were so high, you know, I'm just looking at him wondering whether I could do that or not, you know. And I sit there and talk to him and was singing some of his songs, kind of making him smile and making him remember songs that he had forgot about. And that was one of the best hour and a half I've spent.
Well, he's one of those people who not only was a star as a performer, but he wrote some standard. People Get Ready has become a standard in pop music.
Yeah, he was a great writer.
And he started off as a kind of a doo-wop singer and then went solo.
With Jerry Butler and Impressions, yeah.
This album was recorded live over the course of 5 days in March. Mm-hmm. Right here in New York.
Electro Lady Studio.
Was there a reason to record it there? Simply because it's a historic place where Jimi Hendrix used to
record? I don't
know.
That could have been. Don picked the place, and it was cool with me, you know, because I liked Jimi Hendrix also, and I felt his presence in the studio. But we went in, me and Don talked about doing 12 songs, and we got there, and we wound up recording 23.
Well, you don't have 23 on the CD.
No, but we've got some in the can that could be for part two.
Mm-hmm. I assume that there are a lot of songs that you wish you could have recorded.
Oh, there's so many. It's ridiculous. That's the thing about it. Songs wake me up 3 o'clock in the morning going through my head, and I got to sing it until I can get back to sleep.
Well, okay, so you became a star because of the various recordings that you did following Tell It Like It Is. I don't remember how many top 10 records you've had, but it's a fair number.
A few,
And then you started doing other things. You did a commercial for Cotton, I remember. You started appearing as an actor.
Yeah.
Had you imagined when you started that your career would take off in all sorts of other directions? What did you hope for when you recorded Tell It Like It Is? I think it was your second or third record, but when you started recording, what did you
No,
think
I recorded
your career
in 1960, the first thing with Alan Toussaint, and I did maybe about 20 songs with them.
Alan Toussaint, wow.
Right.
On piano?
Yeah. He was
working on the coal mine?
Yep. With Lee Dorsey.
Mm-hmm. But that was Lee Dorsey, right.
But, you know, so I just wanted to sing. I didn't think about what the outcome was going to be or whatever. You know, I just wanted to be heard.
So when people asked you to start trying your hand at acting, did you just think, okay, that's...
it was like I did a thing with Dennis Quaid and John Goodman and Everybody's All-American. I did a thing with Nicolas Cage and Judge Ryan Hall called Xander Lee. I was in something else with Mickey Rourke. It was fun.
The legendary,
you know,
Mickey Rourke.
I'm not looking to be into too many movies, but if something come along, I'll do it, you know.
When you're singing, do you prefer performing for an audience or in the studio where you can correct things?
I like both. You know, like when you're in the studio, it's like you're painting a picture for the audience, you know, for who's going to listen to it. You're putting it on canvas. And then when they're live, you know, you got the audience and you got the energy coming from them and you're giving them your energy. And so it's a great thing. And you get a reward, you know, when they stand up and applaud for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are certain things that happen also during live recordings, aren't there? Have you ever done a live recording?
What do you mean?
Well, because mistakes can be made, but in the end, there's a certain kind of excitement level.
Yeah, I mean, whatever's there, that's how it was supposed to be, as human, you know? People are human and things happen.
Isn't it your birthday this week?
Thursday.
Ah, well, happy birthday.
Thank you.
After 35 years, didn't you recently announce that you were leaving the Neville Brothers?
Well, I told them I had some stuff I had to do, you know, and I couldn't do both
present?
Of them.
Hmm? Is that a birthday present?
Oh, no. I'm just saying I had to, I was thinking, nobody know how long they got left on this earth and things, so I'm saying I'd be mad at myself if I don't take this time now and do what I want to do, and so that's all I'm doing. So I'm not doing the Jazz Fest with them this year, but maybe next year we'll do it, you know. We'll probably do some stuff again down the line.
Because the Neville Brothers have participated in the Jazz Festival in New Orleans for many, many years.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're still going to do it, you know. But, I mean, the Neville Brothers without me is a funk band, you know. That's what they do. I might do, like, 2 or 3 ballads at the most but everything else is up-tempo, funk, and, you know, New Orleans And they're still great. I think my son Ivan's going to be doing a thing with him, and art son Ian.
So you have two sons now working with the
Neville Brothers. Art son Ian.
Oh, Art.
Yeah.
Oh. And then you said that there'll probably be another doo-wop album?
Yeah, I've been talking with Don Walls, who's the president of Blue Note. I was talking about that from the first one. That's why we got 23 songs. We used 12 on the CD. We got some left. And we talked about some more that we want to go in and do, you know. And all the musicians, they're chomping at the bit to get back in the studio.
Keith will come
again. Oh, yeah,
no
doubt, yeah.
He said this was one of the easiest sessions he's ever been involved with.
Probably everybody. It was a labor of love. You listen to the record, you can hear everybody smiling. They smiled the whole session, you know.
Well, to some degree, it's also because people are really nostalgic for the music of their youth on public television.
Yeah.
Whenever they're fundraising, they do these doo-wop specials.
Right.
And it's because people remember those groups with so much fondness, and those songs are what their childhood was often all about.
Right. So those songs are special, you know. There's a lot of them from back there that just waiting to get back out here, you know, get back on the air.
Well, some of them seem today kind of rudimentary and simple-minded, but others sound like they could just be revived. And I mean, like, I can't imagine anybody recording a new version of G.
Well, you know,
who knows? But then there are other songs, like some of the ones you've chosen here, that could have been written last week.
I know. And I was doing a thing at Lincoln Center with Paul Simon, so we sat in the dressing room and started talking, and it seemed like we could have grew up in the same block. You know, we started talking, hey, you remember this and you remember that, and, you know, and it was cool.
He also grew up with doo-wop.
Yeah.
Well, there is a certain kind of harmony that, I guess, is classic.
Yeah.
And so when you're thinking about an arrangement, do you automatically fall into that kind of four-part harmony?
I don't think about the harmony. You know, I just think about what I can portray from my heart, you know, the harmony that come later.
A couple of these songs I don't really associate with doo-wop, like Be My Baby. But
we made it a doo-wop.
Uh-huh. Do you think doo-wop, actually, they took an awful lot of classic American songs and did doo-wop versions of
them. Yeah. Like I said, it's a state of mind, really. You know, it's a doo-wop era. That's how I look at it.
So what are some of the songs I can expect to hear on the next album?
We did a version of Dad Is Home, which a lot of people don't realize. They had a song before that called A Thousand Miles Away by the Heartbeats, who was also Shep and the Limelighters who did that.
Well, A Thousand Miles Away was all because people were in the military
coming home.
In November, you did a live show at the Brooklyn Bowl that will be aired on PBS in March. You were joined on stage by Paul Simon and Joan Osborne. What was that like, and how did the audience respond to do you sing any doo-wop on that?
Oh, yeah, we did some the stuff from the album, and Eugene Pitt and Dickie Harmon and all the guys were there, and my bass player, David Johnson, and my drummer, Earl Smith, Joan Osborne, we sang Money Honey together, and Paul Simon sang You're Mine, We Belong Together.
Aaron Neville's latest album is My True Story. It's available on Blue Note Records, and I thank you so much for being on our show today.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
On Monday's show, Brooke Gladstone fills in as guest host. She'll be speaking with neurologist Oliver Sacks about hallucinations and what they tell us about how the brain works. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blake Neshick, Stephen Valentino, and Julia Corcoran. Melissa Egan is the executive producer, and Debbie Daughtry is at the audio controls. We had help today from Hugh Sansom, Sarah Waltuck, Judy Joe, and contributing producer Barbara Kahn. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. Thanks for listening. Tune in with Brooke Gladstone on Monday.